everyone, and welcome to Big Nerdy Questions, Episode 2. Tonight, we are going to tackle what would happen with the mutations of the X-Men, but not in a heroic fashion. Oh no. Tonight, we're going to be talking about what would happen if the X-Men mutations applied to your daily lives, and which mutation would most ruin your day-to-day life. With me tonight on the panel are Matt.
Hello again.
And for the first time, we welcome Rachel.
Hello.
But before we get into our big nerdy question, we do have some business to take care of. Matt, who's our sponsor tonight?
Well, our sponsor for today's episode is Howlett's Deli. Howlett's Deli will slice your meat.
Thank you for that sponsorship. Howlett's Deli is a very appropriate sponsor for tonight's episode.
James is a great guy.
He's a fantastic guy. We also have our big nerdy recommendation of the week, and tonight our recommendation is a science fiction novel classic. The recommendation is The Doomsday Book by Connie Willis. This award-winning book, published in, I believe, 1989 or 90, is about time travel, but in one of the more unique ways I've ever read, where historians at a university in England use time travel to go back in time and observe the past without interfering in it so as to better understand their historical arguments. In this particular novel, the historians study the Black Plague, but unfortunately things go awry in both the past and the present. It is a fantastically written novel full of pathos and drama, and historically accurate depictions of the Black Death in England. So check it out, The Doomsday Book by Connie Willis. That's our big nerdy recommendation of the week. One more thing to take care of before we get into our big nerdy question. There was a bit of feedback from our first episode where a few people did say which universe they'd most want to live in. One listener said that he preferred to live in Discworld from the novel series, which was an interesting choice. Maybe he's a very humorous fellow. We had another listener write in and say that he would prefer to live in Babylon 5. So he must like space station life. I'm sure it's a very interesting and upbeat existence living in Babylon 5. And one other person suggested life in the Pokemon universe. And not just Pokemon Go, but the actual Pokemon universe from the anime and the games. Because most people are so caught up in helping their Pokemon that violence is actually channeled into Pokemon and not as much against each other. So an interesting theory. We thank all of the listeners who gave us feedback from the first episode. If you'd like us to read your feedback on air with your name attached, please remember to send us that feedback to bignerdyquestion@gmail.com or bnqfeedback@gmail.com, or you can send us a tweet at bnqpodcast. We're looking forward to hearing which mutations you think will most ruin your life after you listen to this episode, which is a good segue to our big nerdy question of the week. Which X-Men mutation would most ruin your life? Rachel, which X-Men character would you like to talk about first?
Oh boy, I thought about it for a while, and the general consensus of people I talk to seems to be Rogue. Mostly because she can't have skin-to-skin contact with anybody without triggering her powers, and she can't really control it beyond that, and it also, you know, saps other people, which isn't good for the other people as well. So, definitely not a good adolescent problem to have, especially when it first happens in any continuality.
It seems like the first time it surfaces for Rogue and a lot of the continualities, someone's going to get grievously injured or worse.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the more poignant scenes in the first X-Men film when they show Rogue's powers first manifesting. And I think you're correct. It completely screws up the mind of anyone who suddenly you have essentially the touch of death. What are your thoughts on Rogue, Matt?
She's got a really rough. Any skin-to-skin contact, it forces her. It's involuntarily. She will absorb not only the person's powers, but also their memories. And throughout the comics, she pretty consistently sees it not as a power, but actually as a curse. Which is why she always wears the gloves. And it's what she had the relationship with Gambit that was kind of the on-again, off-again thing for years and years and years. And the big thing that kept causing their relationship to fail is really her being afraid to have that contact, because she knows that, you know, she can't, like, put her hand up on his face or anything like that with her bare hands, so she's never going to feel his skin without literally hurting him. And if she touches someone's skin to skin long enough, she will kill them. That's been established.
It's a frightening scenario, and if you apply it to daily life, let's say, for example, you had Rogue's power, but you also happen to be on a subway in New Delhi. You're going to bump into somebody, and somebody will die every time you go to work. So that's not a good thing. At least once, yes.
And you're going to be hot because you're in New Delhi, and you have to cover yourself up as much as possible.
Another bad thing for Rogue. It's sounding like Rogue is our leader in the clubhouse right now. And I talked to some other people, too, and they all said that, well, not all of them, a few of them said Rogue. We did get a few other thoughts, which we'll get to when we mention those characters. With a lot of the other characters we get to, there's a pro and a con, and it's controlled. I mean, yeah, Rogue can wear gloves, but the downsides are permanent and so bad.
I think, I'm trying to remember now, it was the third movie. She was the, like, first in line, practically, to get the cure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think she was, because... As Matt said earlier, that she considered it a curse as opposed to a gift.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, to be fair, considering how it manifested in the first place, I don't disagree with that assessment.
Yeah.
We have Rogue as our clubhouse leader right now for having a pretty crappy power. Matt, who do you want to introduce?
I would like to introduce Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Now... That being said, I think I need to be specific here in that I realize that with the Deadpool movie, they used the name Negasonic Teenage Warhead for one of the characters. And full disclosure, I am a massive Deadpool fan, possibly to an unhealthy extent. But the Negasonic Teenage Warhead I am referring to is actually Ellie Femister from... the comics from New X-Men, because unlike the Negasonic Teenage Warhead in the Deadpool film, this one, the only really established abilities she had were telepathy and precognition. And the precognition is the one that I want to focus on here, because the only event that her precognition ever showed her, in my memory, was the Necrotia event, which... was when the Sentinels came down and killed the half of the world's mutants, because she actually, spoiler alert, dies in that event. But she had the visions come to her. Instead of coming as visions, they come to her as a recurring nightmare 50 times in the same night. And then when she goes to her class the next day, she has the vision during class. And when she has it during class, it actually happens. And she's killed during that. So her power worked precisely once, and the only event she saw was her own death. That's a pretty terrible power, if you ask me. That ruins your life in a really final sort of way. What's your power? Oh, I can see my own death in a nightmare that I have to live through 50 times the night before it happens.
And then you're unable to do anything about it.
Well, I suppose that irritability is part of the power just because of lack of sleep.
Yeah.
But what we're saying for her is that there's no net positive and just the pain of knowing how you're going to die, except not really, because it's just a vague nightmare that ruins your sleep for 50 nights. Then you die.
Yep.
Well, it was the same nightmare 50 times in one night.
Good grief.
Yeah, that's pretty useless.
Useless and horrific.
Yes.
I mean, you said you wanted life ruining. That's...
that, by definition, that ruins life as is.
It's slightly on the life-ending side, but...
So, one that's probably a little bit less bad and a little more on the comical side, we have a submission from Josh P. He'll be on our show in a few episodes from now. But he couldn't be here today, but he's a huge X-Men fan, so he wanted to submit his answer to this question. And his answer was twofold. The first answer he introduced was Beast. And he said, quote, "You can't ask a question like this without at least spending a little bit of time talking about Beast. First off, it's not like he can conceal the fact that he's a humongous, hairy beast. Also, I would hate typing and touchscreens if I had his hands. His dating life would be interesting as well. He'd give terrible back and foot rubs, though I bet he's an excellent cuddler." Thoughts on Beast?
That was another one I was thinking about. Anyone who's clearly not human, like Nightcrawler or Beast, and they both also happen to be blue. I do believe there is a continuality where he can choose to be Beastie, but for the most part, he can't change that at all. That would be terrible.
I mean, he has super intelligence, which is going for him, but he's still a big blue ball of fur.
Yeah. If we're only focusing on, like, an individual power, being the giant blue beast, and part of that being the beast, well, being the beast is really a side effect of the super strength. And that's a brutal drawback.
We already know prejudice in society. One can only imagine how horrific it would be for someone to be, how they would be treated if they were blue and furry. Now, granted, Beast can articulate very well, and, you know, he's got a PhD in some iterations, but still, a lot of people would write him off just from first impressions.
Can you imagine him trying to, like, interview for a professorship somewhere, and he walks in to do the guest lecture? It's like, wait, it's gonna be distracting. Especially, at least for the first week of class, it's going to be really distracting.
Yeah, all the students will be tweeting about him as opposed to the class. Especially in that unfortunate incident when he gets a hairball.
Yeah, that's terrible. I just checked, apparently in most continuities he has 2 PhDs. So, yeah. But I like how the pro has nothing to do with the con.
Absolutely none.
You would think he would be like a blue Hulk or something based on the cons, and no, he's not. So it's kind of random.
I think he's one of the most intelligent X-Men of all.
Probably.
If not the... I honestly think he's more intelligent than Professor X. Don't get me wrong, Professor X is extremely intelligent, but I don't think he is at Beast's level. I don't think he's at Hank McCoy's level.
I think that's fair. We have a very special opinion tonight that we can introduce.
Now, I realize normally with replies to our questions from the online community, we normally wait until the following episode, but this one is particularly special and near and dear to my heart because we got a reply a few hours before recording this from none other than Fabian Nicieza through Twitter. For those of you not familiar with the name, he and a gentleman named Rob Liefeld partnered up and created 2 of my favorite characters in all of comic book history, being in no particular order, Wade Wilson, aka Deadpool, the Merc with the Mouth, and Shatterstar. And I grew up adoring those 2 characters. So Fabian, if you are listening to this, I grew up reading your material. You've been one of my heroes for much of my life. Thank you for replying to this. You are amazing for it. And his reply was that ruin or greatly affect. Physically, probably Nightcrawler. Emotionally, I'd say Professor X.
And I think it goes into Beast is a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Little column A, little column B.
But I think he's right. Nightcrawler is even more strange than Beast. At least Beast, you could maybe, like Josh P. would want to say, you might want to cuddle him. He's furry. Nightcrawler is just straight up weird.
I don't know what's worse, the tail or the fingers.
I don't
I'm
want
not
either
sure
one.
Which part bugs me more with Nightcrawler?
Doesn't he also have like tattoos? Or that wasn't part of him being an actual mutant, though.
That was a religious thing that was at least in the cinematic universe.
Yes, that's correct. But yeah, so that's not part of it. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go with the fingers. Obviously, he uses it to his advantage, but...
I mean, I suppose if you have those abilities long enough, you learn to adapt and hide in the shadows as Nightcrawler can do. But you've got to assume in daily life, if Nightcrawler tried to get a regular job working as the cashier at Burger King, there'd be problems.
You're going to need a hairnet.
Yeah.
Actually, Beast would have the same problem. You're going to need a body-sized hairnet.
There's some blue fur in my Whopper again.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's, I don't even...
And with Nightcrawler, the side effect of his teleportation, the big blue puff of smoke, he can't work in a hospital.
No, he can't.
Can you imagine him in an operating theater? We forgot something, and he teleports out, and it sets off the smoke alarm or something.
He'd be great for Halloween, though. He's got the looks and the blue poofs of smoke. You don't need a smoke machine.
Imagine him working in the stacks of an archives and setting off the sprinklers, trying to, I'm going to shelve these things faster. Poof. And he starts teleporting around. Oh, 2 points have picked up smoke. And there goes the sprinkler and 500 years of history.
He gets to teleport things other than himself, right? If he's holding something or a person.
Oh, if he's holding it, yeah.
If he's holding it, yeah. So he could be a delivery man.
He would be like the fastest pizza guy in history.
Well, maybe the Flash, but we're sticking with X-Men here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Flash still has to run. I mean, Nightcrawler, it's actual proper teleportation. The distance doesn't affect the time.
I thought there was a limitation where he had to be able to see where he was going.
Well, when his powers first started developing, he had to be able to see it. And what it is he has to be able to visualize the location.
Oh, okay. He got better.
So if he has seen it before... Okay. It's really easy for him to teleport there.
If
he's seen a picture of it, he can still do it.
So he took a level in badass? Okay.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. So essentially, he's going to be relying on Google Maps a lot to make sure he gets to the right address for his pizza delivery.
Street View is his best friend.
No kidding.
So there's our hashtag for this week's episode. Hashtag Nightcrawler loves Street View.
And I would also like to put in, while we're still... on the topic of Fabian's submissions, I would like to introduce one other hashtag specially for him, because, you know, there's Deadpool, there's Lady Deadpool, there's Babypool, there's Dogpool, hashtag Dadpool, because he is Deadpool's dad. So, for today's episode, I think we really need to put hashtag Dadpool.
Dadpool it is. Dadpool is one of our other... hashtags for this week's episode. And we should also discuss, he said emotionally, Professor X had the worst deal of it, or at least it could affect your life the most. I definitely can see that, because you constantly have the ability to go in other people's thoughts, see what they're thinking, more so than any nature intends. Because you gotta imagine what comes out of most people's mouths with any sort of filter, not counting Deadpool, is a very small percentage of what people are thinking. For example, at work, if your boss tells you to do something particularly bad or particularly onerous, in your mind, you may be trying to think of ways to feed him to Jar Jar Binks. But in your mouth, you're going to say, okay, sir, how can I get this done for you? Professor X is not going to be able to tell, you know, he's going to go in there and say, oh boy, did you really think that? It's a very powerful ability to have to deal with when you're being bombarded with it on a constant basis.
Yeah, especially I would assume when it first manifested and he didn't have much control over it, I'm surprised it didn't drive him insane. I mean, just absorbing everything all the time.
Yeah. And here's another thing with Professor X. It is an extremely good thing for the Marvel Universe as a whole, that Professor X is a good guy. because he has the power of memory manipulation, which means he could gaslight anyone he wants in such a way that they wouldn't even know they've been gaslit.
Yeah.
He can just change your entire memories. Like, he could just go into Josh's memories, and all of a sudden, Josh's name is Gabriella, and instead of being from where he's from halfway across the state. Or maybe he only speaks Portuguese, or an obscure dialect of Malay.
Hola, y Gabriella?
I think the other benefit to the Marvel Universe is that he was played by Patrick Stewart. I actually thought what you were going to say, and then I'm thinking, no, you're right.
Well, Pat Stew makes everything better.
Yeah.
All hail Pat Stew.
Scientific fact. Patrick Stewart makes everything better, especially when playing opposite Ian McKellen.
Yeah, of course.
Which is a great segue to Magneto, which I'm going to just go out there and say I think Magneto is the best Marvel villain. I'm pretty sure we're going to get to that later in another episode, but what a fantastic character. That said, I don't know if his ability would ruin or greatly affect your life as much as the others, because he has pretty good control over it.
If he couldn't control the metal manipulation, it could honestly have some pretty hilarious effects. But in every portrayal of him I've seen, he either gains control of it quickly or has such incredibly precise control over it that he's overcome any potential drawbacks.
Yeah. I would go with the same thing. It also is completely useless without metal, so that's another thing. It's only as strong as where he is.
I just realized that Magneto is the sonic screwdriver of Marvel.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I mean, his power would have been useless in, say, 1200 BC.
Yeah, probably.
So I guess you could say he's a Magneto screwdriver?
Oh, boy.
Another hashtag, Magneto screwdriver. It's
also... That's right, we're going to have too many hashtags tonight.
It's also my favorite drink.
Wow.
You know now I'm going to have to develop a recipe for that, right?
Oh, fantastic.
That's a competition, guys. If you're listening, come up with a recipe for Magneto screwdriver and let us know what it is, because I have no clue, but I'm sure it could be good.
Wow.
So remember, folks, come up with your own Magneto screwdriver recipe and tweet it at BNQ Podcast, and we may read your recipe on the air.
Absolutely. No
sponsor. I can't promise we're going to, you know, try to drink this because, that could go badly.
No, we're not going to promise to drink it, but we will share it if we find it entertaining or potentially palatable.
If I find it potentially palatable and it's a whiskey, rum, or vodka recipe, I will actually try it beforehand. And if I actually like it, I will read it on the air and review it.
There you go, people. Magneto screwdriver, this is an opportunity. But speaking of opportunity, to be in the X-Men, you need to speak with their leader to have that opportunity. And their leader on the ground, I'd argue, is Scott, Cyclops. And to that end, Josh P. submitted another excerpt about Cyclops. Quote, Cyclops has it pretty bad. I mean, the guy constantly has to wear the ruby quartz visor or glasses, or he just shoots tons of force from his eyes constantly. What does that mean for everyday life? He has to wear weird-looking red glasses to work, to the movies, at night, to dinner in a fancy restaurant, and even to the eye doctor's office, which proves to be a special challenge in and of itself. Can you imagine the kids staring? The adults judging, authority figures quietly suspecting that he's stoned because he appears to be wearing sunglasses indoors, and his dating life. He can never make eye contact with a woman, ever. That'll certainly hinder his ability to form an emotional connection. But if, by some ridiculous miracle, he ends up getting to go all the way, imagine this. They work up a sweat, and the glasses slide a little too far down his nose. Ouch. Now, I know what you're thinking. That's an easy one. Just wear a mask instead of the glasses. And I agree that would be safer, but not for the reason you think. The woman would be safe because she'd see Scott lying on the bed wearing nothing but the mask and point and laugh at him. I think having Cyclops mutation would most ruin my life. What do you guys think?
I think that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
See, I would love to put in a clip from I Wear My Sunglasses at Night in the background while you were reading that, but we don't have that kind of money.
Not yet. Not yet. We may have to revisit that.
Or any money.
No. But I do think that Corey Hart was thinking about Cyclops when he wrote that song.
It's possible.
It's entirely possible. Because, I mean, Cyclops has a legit reason for wearing his sunglasses all the time.
Is it possible that if he were to lose his eyeballs, his power would go away? Because if that's the case, I just did a quick read, and apparently the theory is that something about his eyeballs being an interdimensional, he's releasing powers from another dimension through his eyeballs. So if that were to hold true, then if he were to somehow not have eyeballs anymore, that would technically fix the problem. But then you'd all create, you know, then he'd be blind. So you'd have to just, you know, would you rather be blind or, you know, laser beam people?
Matt, what would you choose?
Well, can you imagine just going through daily life, do you have any idea how many jokes and side comments he must get about seeing the world through rose-colored glasses?
Yeah, it's not like he can have, you know, contact lenses made out of ruby. So.
And with the discussion of music and nerd culture, I think it's actually entirely possible that I Wear My Sunglasses at Night could be about Cyclops when you consider that Led Zeppelin, pretty much everybody's heard of them. They're one of the great classic rock bands, and almost every album had at least one reference to Lord of the Rings.
It's possible.
I mean, there's an entire verse in Ramble On about going to Mordor, and they mention Gollum by name.
And if we're talking the best music with Lord of the Rings, we can never forget the YouTube classic, The Hobbits Are Going to Isengard, Isengard, Isengard.
You're going to hell for that.
Yes, but it'll be stuck in your head all night.
I'm good.
Huh. But yeah, I mean, seriously, I think you're right with Sunglasses at Night, but I think we're right, too, with Cyclops being having a really raw end of the deal. Now, clearly he overcame it because he leads the X-Men field team. He's one of the original X-Men. Let's be honest, he dates Jean Grey. Hello, well done, sir. Seal of approval. Until she becomes the Phoenix. Maybe that's because of his ability. I don't know.
But... regarding women laughing at Cyclops in the bedroom, there is at least once that it didn't happen, or she was able to get the laughing out, because he did, in fact, impregnate Jean Grey, which led to their daughter, Hope.
Now, fill me in. Did Hope have the mutations of either parent?
See, I thought you were going to say Rachel Summers. But that's an alternate timeline version. So, that gets fun.
But it still proves that Scott can be successful in the dating department.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
I know... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
She actually, at one point, did become the Phoenix. But what I would call her main power, because she wasn't a major character for a particularly long period of time, but she did pop up quite a bit, was that she had what's called empathetic power mimicry, which means she could copy people's powers temporarily, but they had to be physically nearby. So take Rogue's power, but it doesn't harm them. It doesn't have any of the drawbacks other than there's a required proximity. So that's really her main power, is the ability to mimic other people's powers.
Which is a fantastic power, I would say.
It really is. And at some point, we need to do an episode on which power from X-Men, I would say, would be the best to have in everyday life.
Absolutely. You know, to use a video game analogy, the way you're describing Hope, she sounds like Kirby.
Yeah, except she doesn't have to eat people to do it.
No, but it would be entertaining if she did.
I don't know about that. I will say that in the alternate universe timeline thingy-majig where Rachel Summers was born, she was basically the new Phoenix. She exclusively got Jean Grey's powers.
Well,
that's at least one circumstance where it didn't pass on, or Cyclops didn't pass on.
Let's turn to Jean Grey then for a minute, because there's two facets, obviously, of Jean Grey. There's standard Jean Grey and the Phoenix. And I think we're going to evaluate each one a bit differently. With original Jean Grey, telekinesis, minor telepathy, I see you could be some downsides like with Professor X, but there could also be some upsides. Phoenix, on the other hand, I doubt Phoenix would be able to blend in with polite society, if you get what I'm saying.
With Jean Grey, are we specifically looking at Phoenix or in general?
Well, both, because I honestly think that Phoenix Jean Grey should be treated as a different character than standard Jean Grey.
And does that include Dark Phoenix?
I would think so.
Okay, because if you split that up, that could be three people, and then it's just complicated.
Well, the thing is, Phoenix and Dark Phoenix both use the Phoenix Force, which is what her power is.
Okay.
And it's a cosmic-level power. There's one point where she defeats one of the Heralds of Galactus, the most famous of Herald of Galactus, of course, being the Silver Surfer. She easily defeats a Herald of Galactus, and she can survive any environment. They actually portray her at one point as being inside the core of a star, like it's nothing. I honestly feel like the Phoenix Force was always something that was too powerful. It was kind of like having God mode for the character, just about. So I don't know how much of a drawback that really is, because it's so incredibly powerful. Not to mention that as Phoenix, she's able to resurrect herself.
So, Matt, if I may ask a question with your Marvel knowledge, would you say that the Phoenix is more powerful, or an individual wielding the Infinity Gauntlet is more powerful?
Infinity Gauntlet.
Okay.
Definitely the Infinity Gauntlet, because specifically the Infinity Gauntlet with all of the gems. If you have the Infinity Gauntlet and you have all of the Infinity gems in it, you are a god, as long as you're wearing it.
Whereas Phoenix is sort of a god-like creature?
Right.
Still incredibly powerful.
The Phoenix is basically a cosmic super entity.
Well, so I assume she's on par, if not more powerful, than the Marvel version of the Norse gods, then?
Right.
Okay.
She would honestly probably tear Thor limb from limb. Like he's nothing. She could probably do it without even coming in contact with him.
That's encouraging.
And I'm sure that someone has done that on an online animated film somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere, some way, you know there's a slash fic about it, too.
Rule 34.
Yeah, Rule 34 is in place with all of these X-Men. That's just a blanket statement. So, obviously, the Phoenix is not going to be around society, but let's just take Jean Grey as she was introduced. That's more just standard telekinesis, a little bit of telepathy. You have the same issues that you have with Professor X, but with telekinesis, I mean, I don't know enough about Jean Grey off the top of my head to say whether or not she could control it very well. I know she could, but is it possible, Matt, that in a fit of anger or confusion, she could have accidentally manipulated objects in a dangerous fashion?
None of the portrayals of her that I've ever read really showed her having difficulty controlling it. The main thing that she dealt with, especially in the earlier comics, like in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and really even into the 90s, was her big thing was actually moral dilemmas relating to using her powers. I remember one issue vividly that I read when I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and I don't remember which continuity it's from or what year it was published, so I apologize to the listeners in advance for not being able to tell you the issued page. But I vividly remember from my childhood reading one issue in which the X-Men needed to get inside an apartment, I believe because they thought someone might be about to commit suicide. And Cyclops told her to use her telekinesis to actually unlock the front door because the door was locked. And she had a brief ethical crisis about essentially picking a lock because she was worried about committing an invasion of privacy.
That's interesting.
It's very interesting. I think that shows her character, but it also goes to one of the theories you told me about before we started recording, Matt, and that's the social commentary of the X-Men relating to civil rights. Would you mind briefly explaining that to our listeners?
Right. So I've seen quite a few articles and interviews about the origins of the X-Men comics, and I'm sure some of our listeners will already know that there are a huge number of parallels between the X-Men and the civil rights movement in the early years of the comics, with the general consensus and claims being that Professor X is meant explicitly to be an analog or representation of Martin Luther King Jr. Because in the X-Men universe, instead of whites and blacks being separate, it's mutants and non-mutants. And the mutants are being persecuted, and they're being treated much in the same way that people of color were treated in and before the 1960s in the United States, and in some places still today. And he was really meant as this analog for Martin Luther King Jr., trying to reconcile the two groups and bring them together through understanding and discussion and mutual benefit. And then Magneto represents the Malcolm X figure, where he feels that they're being attacked, and that while being peaceful is great and wonderful, that they should be able to use their powers to protect themselves from the humans who do not understand their powers. And this real play between the characters gives them this massive amount of depth that you really don't see with many other comic characters, especially with the background for Magneto being a childhood Holocaust survivor and the discussions of World War II and ethnic cleansing. And they get into a lot of really good, really important social issues, which is something many comics don't really shy away from, but they always like to use analogs. And that's one of the things that I think makes comic books such a great medium for storytelling, is because they're able to reach out and talk about the issues of their time in wonderful, just absolutely brilliant depth, and just address things head on, but do it in a medium that young people are going to pay attention to.
Here, here.
Because me growing up in the late 80s and early 90s, I remember there was a large focus, especially in Marvel, of discussing the drug use epidemic, especially heroin, in the late 80s. And I believe it was the early 90s where they actually had Peter Parker and Mary Jane Watson get divorced, and part of it was her drug addiction. I mean, they really take social issues head on, and I really think that one of the major precedent setters for that was the early X-Men analoging the civil rights movement. The first, of course, for me, being the establishment of Captain America, with the cover of Captain America number one being Captain America punching Hitler in the mouth before the U.S. entered World War II, and even before Pearl Harbor. I'm getting off my soapbox now.
No, that was fantastic, and I think it's the kind of context that makes you realize that a lot of these powers, while we're taking them at face value to apply them to our to our world today or to daily life, they are meant as analogs for civil rights, for other social issues. So it's not truly absurd to question whether or not Beast or Nightcrawler would experience prejudice in society, because that's exactly the point.
I honestly think Scott Summers' Cyclops is a fantastic and whether or not it would, I'm not going to guess at the intent of the character's creators. I am never going to question anything that comes out the mouth of Stan Lee or the late, great Jack Kirby, but I think Scott Summers is a fantastic analog for being blind, because he has to have this thing covering his eyes that make his disability slash, in this case, mutation, painfully obvious to everyone around him. Hey, there's something wrong with this guy's eyes. And he's gonna get treated differently for that. Now, if he's blind, you know, people may make faces or try to trick him with physical objects, things like that. There are many, many stories of blind people being abused by their caretakers, with them stealing valuables and replacing them with things that feel physically the same but are cheap imitations. And, you know, the prejudice you would probably face would actually be fear, because they're going to see the ruby glasses or visor, and they're going to be like, this guy's got some crazy power with his eyes. He's obviously a mutant. Big, scary, bad thing. Oh, look, here comes the Mutant Registration Act.
Yeah. So we're running a little short on time, so we have to address the most famous X-Men to non-X-Men fans, and that's Wolverine, as our last one we're going to get to in this episode. And we can revisit X-Men characters later, absolutely. Now, with Wolverine, I would have to clear up a misconception that some of our listeners who aren't as familiar with X-Men may think that Wolverine's power is having claws, because that's what you always see. That's not necessarily the case. His power is regeneration. You have several iterations of the character of Wolverine, of Logan. In the original iteration, his power of regeneration allowed scientists to manipulate him to add metal adamantium to his skeleton to give him the adamantium claws. In a later version, called the Bone Claw version, Logan's claws are actually part of his mutation. But in any event, the claws, when they come out and retract, are actually cutting his skin, and he's healing himself after each incident. You're going to have a lot of pain if you're Wolverine. So I want to ask Rachel, what do you think Wolverine, the kind of pain he must go through when he's regenerating from things has got to be horrific, right?
Yeah, not. I was actually, in my head, focusing most on the regeneration, because not only, you know, ow, but I also believe, from what little I've researched, that he can't die. I mean,
he can't.
He was.
It's hard, but he can't.
There was the issue called Death of Wolverine in 2014, in which the only reason he was able to, quote, die was that his regeneration ability was turned off.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I know he also has increased longevity. Thank you.
Well, that's I've always thought of the longevity as a side effect of his healing factor. Because his body is and his body heals at different rates depending on who's writing.
Yeah.
Because there's been quite a few people who've written for Wolverine. And some have him healing faster than others. But that healing factor causes him to live so, so long. I believe there's some versions of Wolverine that actually depict him as being alive during the American Civil War.
Wow.
Yes, I believe that is the case.
But isn't he Canadian?
He's Canadian, but I'm wanting to say that he was depicted as being 120 years old while serving in World War II.
Wow.
Yes, in most cases, he was born in the late 1880s. So, yes. So clearly, you know, whether or not he stays alive this long is just an extra superpower, or because of his regeneration factor, you know, basically, instead of the cells dying off, which leads to death by old age, they constantly regenerate, then yes, that's entirely possible. Hence, you know, Wade Wilson's problem with regeneration.
Right.
Also being a problem. But it seems to me that not only the pain, but, you know, he's kind of got the, for lack of a better term, the vampire thing going on, except vampires can kill themselves when they get bored of living hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years.
Well, I honestly think the worst thing about the regeneration is the extended longevity. And the reason that I say that, because most people are like, oh, but it's so great, you can live so much longer and experience so much more life. Yes, and you will know years and years ahead of time that you are going to outlive every single person you grew up with. You are going to outlive your children, you might live out your grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And I think that would be hellish. To outlive everyone you love. There's an old saying that the worst thing that can ever happen to a parent is to outlive their child.
That's why there's such a prominent trope of who wants to live forever. Because in a lot of circumstances, immortality is technically the worst superpower.
Well, they even address that in Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
With the character of me.
Yes.
Who is literally the last living being in the universe.
Yes.
I mean, she's lived so long, she's forgotten her name.
Yes. So it sounds, I mean, can you even keep living when the universe is over? I guess she'll find out.
Well, she doesn't find out because she gets in another TARDIS and goes back through all time and space.
That's the way to find her out.
It's a good hypothetical. I have no idea to the answer to that.
Can you live past the end of the universe? I know, that's another fun...
And another thing with Wolverine, or with Logan, I feel like the good-bad ratio of regeneration is directly proportional to how much damage you take in life. If you're going out and you work as a CPA, go to work each day, come home, you know, read, have a fairly quiet existence, it'll just help you get better when you're sick, and that's probably not a bad thing. But if you have a life like Wolverine does, where let's say that Wolverine is hired as a merc by the U.S. government to go fight in some other country, they can torture him beyond any reasonable measure, and he'll feel the pain, but won't die. And that's horrific.
He can also be, Heroes, the original series also toyed with that. He could be eviscerated over and over again. He could be experimented on, tortured. And Joss Whedon's series, Angel, also stuck Angel, who's, of course, a vampire, at the bottom of the ocean in a coffin-like structure for months.
Well,
and you could do that same thing with Wolverine.
Well, I don't know if he would survive being drowned.
No, he was in a box.
He would run out of oxygen though.
Well, would his lungs just keep regenerating? Could he have lung death? Could he have brain death?
Well, it would depend on how fast his healing factors work.
I mean, if he got spaced, could he live through that? I mean, we honestly don't know.
Oh no, explosive decompression. So no.
Well,
I mean, I think he would get brain dead if he had 10 Magneto screwdrivers.
Probably can't get drunk either.
There's several continuities where he actually has severe alcoholism.
Well, yeah, if he can't get drunk, of course he's an alcoholic. But no, I mean,
can't get drunk, and they actually make fun of that in the Deadpool video game.
I believe it.
If you stand at the refrigerator, you can make him drink beers, and after I think it's like 5 or 6 beers, he'll actually look at the camera and say, "Why are we even doing this? I can't get drunk anyway. Stupid healing factor," and breaks the bottle.
That sounds about right. Now, I'm going off of what other super regeneration, immortality sort of things that work in other sort of comics and TV shows and literature, as to what circumstances he would apply to the other examples, we don't know yet. Again, like I said, could you space him? I don't know. If you chop his head off, does his head grow back? If you detach his head back on, I mean, you know, I'm sure the
Wolverine's regeneration, none I've seen has been fast enough to survive a decapitation. The only character I've seen with accelerated healing who can survive decapitation is Deadpool.
Which has
happened repeatedly.
Wasn't his, Deadpool was not a, he was an artificially created mutant. Didn't he get his superpower from Wolverine, or am I missing that?
Well, at least in the film, and I believe in some interpretation in comics, he had the same serum applied to him that was applied to Wolverine during the Weapon Program, but instead of being by the Weapon Program, it was by a private group that did it to him.
Okay, so that's a, depending on what continuity you're talking about.
Right.
Okay, because I'd like to think that when it comes to the regeneration ability, you know, what happens to Deadpool can happen to Wolverine, but that might not be the case either, so that's confusing. But that's comics for you, so.
Well, I think on that note, we'll have to wrap up this episode, and I'll ask the two of you, Rachel first, of all the X-Men we've discussed in this episode, which power would most ruin your life?
You know, I was going to say Rogue, and I think I've changed my mind, actually. I think I'm going to go with the constant regeneration, because if it's the kind that's brought on upon adolescence, then you're stuck with whatever circumstances you have in adolescence. So if you get childhood cancer and manage to survive until you're 15 and that's when it kicks in, then you're Deadpool. If you've any other sort of issue, and even barring a perfectly healthy person turning 15 and having regeneration, we've discussed, you know, the torture, the pain, the possibility that you will not die of old age. It would suck. I'm going to go with that one.
Matt?
See, it's kind of a toss-up for me, but I really think that I'm going to have to give it to Scott Summers just because the mutation is so obvious and he can't control it.
Yeah, and I, for my part, am going to go with Rogue. I think a lot of them have a lot of problems, but I am super conscientious anyway of my surroundings. Maybe it's because, you know, I'm constantly in the city and environments where I'm with a lot of people. I'd be so afraid of accidentally bumping into somebody with skin exposed for some reason and causing such horrific pain to an innocent person. And the other powers with Wolverine and Cyclops. With Wolverine, it's all on you. Cyclops is on other people if you can't control the eyes, which is horrible, but you can at least wear the glasses. With Rogue's ability, one slip up, and it's not you that's hurt, it's somebody else. And for that reason, I have to go with Rogue, but none of them are a cup of tea.
Yeah, I would think those would be my top three. Those are my top three.
So I will submit it to the listeners. We'll put those as the top three, Rogue, Cyclops, and Wolverine. Let us know which of those three would most ruin your life, or if there's another one that you think is worse, like Beast or Nightcrawler or someone we didn't get to today, let us know in the feedback. Again, that is our emails are bignerdyquestion@gmail.com or bnqfeedback@gmail.com. And on Twitter, we're @BNQPodcast. Before we wrap up, however, we have one more piece of business. We have to kill Jar Jar Binks. How are we going to kill Jar Jar tonight, Matt?
Well, Josh, today, because we did mention whether or not Wolverine would be able to survive being spaced, we're going to have to eject Jar Jar Binks out an airlock while traveling through hyperspace.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jar Jar's dead, and we're not. This has been B&Q signing off.